Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh reportedly remains in serious condition this morning. Saleh left Yemen Sunday to receive medical treatment in Saudi Arabia. According to one U.S. official, he has burns covering 40% of his body and suffered extensive shrapnel injuries. Yemeni officials say they expect him back in the country in a matter of days, but the severity of his injuries suggests he may not be returning to his home country anytime soon.
Well, it was an assassination attempt.
That's what they're now saying, is that when you look at the building in which he was injured, their windows are blown outward, not inward, instead of a rocket attack, such as the Yemeni officials had said. Joining us now is Hussein Ibish, senior research fellow at the American Task Force on Palestine. And Hussein, I'm wondering if the conversation over Ali Abdullah Saleh's condition is moot at this point, in terms of whether as it relates to the future of the country. Does it matter whether the president's condition as a future leader?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the fact that he was badly injured enough to be forced to go to Saudi Arabia and basically give himself bodily over to one of the key powers that had been pressuring him to step down, trying to arrange for him to step down, and becoming extremely frustrated with his constant coy acceptance and refusal of their plan, indicates that he doesn't have a future. I'm just very skeptical that, he would have done that if his wounds weren't potentially fatal. And I'm very skeptical that the Saudis are just going to let him leave gratis once he's better. In fact, I would guess that at his age, it's unlikely that he'll have a full recovery.
And we're speaking with Hussein Ibish, senior research fellow at the American Task Force on Palestine. So does that leave us with a vacuum of power in Sana'a? We've heard reporters say that although on paper the vice president has the rule over the country, in fact it's Saleh's son who's in the presidential palace wielding soldiers and making orders.
It's his son and his nephews who are in key positions. But you have to understand that for the past few weeks, and this is how Saleh ended up getting injured, I think almost certainly, is that there has been a split within the elite and within the military that has pitted different parts of the Yemeni establishment against each other. Saleh's faction is organized around his ruling party, the General People's Congress, and there's a kind of umbrella coalition of opposition groups called the Joint Meeting Party, which have actually met for the first time now that Saleh is physically gone from the country. You're absolutely right. I mean, there's a very strong sense in which Saleh himself is gone, but the power struggle within the Yemeni elites is not resolved. And look, clearly there's an element of this that goes very deep, but there's also a superficial level that may actually be very important of a competition between the younger generation, Saleh's sons and nephews, and the sons of the Ahmar clan on the one hand, plus the interests of dissident generals that have sided with the opposition as well. So you've got a really dangerous split within the establishment. The question is, will the Saudis be able to patch together some kind of deal, some kind of transition or reconciliation plan that gives everybody in the establishment what they need? That would only leave the Yemenis dealing with several insurgencies, Al-Qaeda and other jihadist groups, a Somali refugee crisis, and a shortage of everything, among other issues.
Well,
once the power struggle is resolved.
the resolved is a term of art there. We're talking with senior research fellow of the American Task Force on Palestine, Hussein Ibish, in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. The Saudis can't pay everybody off like they might be able to do in their own country. And in Egypt, it was a cleavage with the army and the government.
Right.
It's tribal in Yemen. They both potentially exist in Saudi Arabia. So does President Saleh take his place among the pantheon of former discredited dictators like Idi Amin and the leader of Tunisia? And what pressure does that put on the Saudis?
Well, I don't think it puts any pressure on the Saudis, because I actually think most forces, including the United States and a lot of Yemenis, would actually be glad that the Saudis, sort of let him in for medical treatment and then gave him a place to stay indefinitely, whether he's happy with that or not. So I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is more sort of, does Saleh join the deposed presidents, Ben Ali and Mubarak of Egypt, Ben Ali of Tunisia and Mubarak of Egypt, in the sense that these are Arab autocrats that have been removed in the course of the Arab Spring, the uprisings that have emerged since the end of last year in the Arab world, much of the Arab world, and thereby signaling the beginning of an orderly transition towards greater democratization, towards change? Or is this the beginning of a scenario we're seeing in Libya or something similar to what's happening in Syria, where the country goes into convulsions of violence? And particularly it's sort of the Libya scenario that's very worrisome, because you do have already a split in the army here. You don't have rival governments. You don't have an open civil war as you do in Libya, but you have the makings of it. The thing is that Libya could happily split into, well, not happily, but could
split into east and west.
In a coherent way, split into two, whereas Yemen may split into shivers.
Well, let's ask about what may happen with Yemen. This is, you've been talking not just about Yemen, but you've written a great deal about Yemen's future. And, you know, one of the reasons that so many countries backed Saleh's government was they were concerned over what might happen if Yemen descended into chaos.
That's right.
Yeah, so what happens next?
Well, I mean, I think that's the big question, and I don't think anyone has a clear answer to that. If the power struggle between the elites, between the factions led by the Saleh family and the Ahmar family, which is not, by the way, a tribal rivalry, they are members of the same tribe, the Hashid tribe. This is a clan thing and a political thing. So it's familial rather than tribal in this case, although there are certainly tribal differences are important in Yemen, but so are sectarian differences, ethnic differences, regional differences, ideological differences. So this is it's quite a mess. The extent to which the power struggle can be resolved is really unclear. And
Hussein, what do you make, quickly before we go, of these talks that are reportedly, the State Department says, are being conducted at the U.S. Embassy in Sana'a,
right?
The ambassador meeting with all of these possible transition figures.
It's the big hope for the future. The Saudis are taking the lead politically. The U.S. is supporting very strongly. And this is a great opportunity, but there has to be some kind of a deal that gives everybody the minimum of what they need. If not, they'll keep fighting, and then the country will continue to slide towards anarchy, playing into the hands of al-Qaeda. It'll be very dangerous.
Hussein Ibish, Senior Research Fellow with the American Task Force on Palestine, talking about the situation in Yemen. At this point, reports are that Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh remains in serious condition. He's under medical care in Saudi Arabia.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.